Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sapphic Culture Club, where we explore lesbian themes in film, TV, books, music, and anywhere else sapphics roam. We are your hosts. I'm Laurel Hachinova.
And I'm Audrey Nee. Laurel, we have arrived at the second movie on the list of top 10 lesbian films. For those of you just tuning in, this season is dedicated to the top 10 films on the list of favorite lesbian films from the Portrait of a Lady on Fire survey.
That feels like it is now longer.
It's just growing. But starting now, we are just going to shorten that to the top 10 lesbian films from this point forward, because I cannot ever say that full sentence again. We also wanted to just give a quick shout out to the people who are listening, who are also watching along with us.
On your own time. We're not like doing watch-alongs. But
yeah, we're not. I mean, yeah. Maybe we'll do a watch-along, but yes, so far we have not. Yeah. Everyone who watched Desert Hearts before the last episode dropped, we love you. We love you anyway, but you know.
Right, yeah. You're our favorites.
You're our favorite, yeah. So yes, please keep doing that, because I don't know, it feels like it's more sort of a collaborative process.
Yeah. And I feel like it makes the podcast better for you probably if you have seen it recently, you know.
We're doing this for you.
Right. Yeah. Do it for yourself. Yeah.
Okay. Coming back to this episode, working backwards, the ninth film on this list, as voted on by you, is the 2011 Swedish romantic drama, or I guess you could say dromance. Or Romama. I like Romama better.
Dromantic
romance. Kiss Mig. Or Kiss Me in English. But also, at one point, this was titled With Every Heartbeat. I think the soundtrack is also called With Every Heartbeat after the Robin song. So it has three names.
Is that the song that plays at the end?
Yes. I'm going to talk about that later.
Oh,
but we're going to, I think for the sake of this episode, should we just call it Kiss Me or Kiss
Mig? Yeah,
Me?
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because I don't even know if we're saying Kiss Mig correctly. So disclaimers, spoilers, obviously, because we're going to talk about the whole film. So if you haven't seen it, it is available, at least in the United States, for rent from Apple TV and for free with commercials on Tubi, which is how I watched it. And I appreciated
Same.
Having commercial breaks sometimes.
Me too.
We'll get into that later. And also, we apologize ahead of time if we mess up the pronunciation of any Swedish words or your usernames, other people's names.
anything we mess up, we apologize for it right now.
We try to look up stuff and like how to pronounce it correctly, but we likely don't always get it right, especially because I'm basically copying what Google Translate tells me to say in some cases. So you can blame the robots in
Dang.
In those cases. They don't care.
True. Okay, let's dive in. So, Kiss Me was directed by Alexandra Therese Koenig. Oh my God, I'm already messing up. Who also directed this film called Girls Lost, which I have not seen, but it's inspired by Virginia Woolf's Orlando. So, sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Would check it out. The film was also written by Alexandra Therese, and Josephine Tengblad contributed to the idea, which I'm going to let Laurel talk about in a little bit. Because it's pretty fascinating. The two main stars of the film are Ruth Vega Fernandez, who is a Spanish-Swedish actress. I'm calling her affectionately the brunette moving forward.
The brown hair.
Yeah, she played Mia. And you may know her from this little thing she did with this little actor named Adele Anel, Le Tong.
It blew my mind. Google kept forcing her name and Adele's name together in the like suggested results, and I'm like, I'm not looking for portrait stuff right now.
Google's like, I know what you want.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, you're so right, Google. I really did want this.
It's so weird because I knew the name Ruth Vega Fernandez from Le Tong, and I knew it from this film, and for some reason the two things
just
merged together, and it's like the person looks like the person. So
yeah.
So Liv Mionis plays Frida, the yellow-haired love interest, and she is in a lot of stuff, but you've seen her in Midsommar.
The daylight horror film.
Daylight horror
The Swedish
film.
Daylight horror film.
The sunny horror film.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's that. And as I mentioned earlier, it came out in 2011.
So as Audrey mentioned, Josephine Tengblad had the concept for this. It is loosely based on her real life coming out story. Side note, Josephine also played Alin, Frida's girlfriend in the movie, which is cool. It's like you get to see her on screen, especially when you know that this was based on her real life coming out story, which was happening in parallel with the production of the film. So a little bit about how this came together. Alexandra Therese, Alexandra, ATK.
ATK, yes, perfect.
Already had written, somehow, a 20-page treatment about a woman falling in love with her stepsister? Sure, all right.
Like you do.
Well, isn't that, who what's the thing that, like, stepsister? Clueless is based on?
Is it some Shakespearean thing? Oh, no, it's
or
Emma.
It's like, yeah, okay. Jane yeah, yeah, Austen. So it's like, fine. Falling in love with, like, step-siblings or something is a theme, I guess.
It's sexy.
It's a sexy theme. And then, so she approached Josephine with this, and she wasn't like, oh, this is exactly what I'm going through. But she was like, oh, yeah, I would love to work on this with you. But I think internally she was like, oh, my God, this resonates with me a lot. And maybe I'm not exactly sure why at the moment. But in an interview with Josephine, we find that this theme that came up with the creation of Desert Hearts as well comes up here, of course, in that nobody wanted to help them make the film because of the theme. Initial financiers wanted to make it a comedy. They also wanted to make Mia a lot more upper class. And they wanted Frida and Mia to be younger, like 16 years old. Which, sure, I mean, I don't know. Like, if people are going to fall in love with their step-siblings, like, why not be teenagers as well? That's, like, not as much of an issue to me. As long as they're both 16.
Wait, like, that's less of an issue to you than older step-siblings?
No, it's not. It's not. Like, it's kind of like a, I don't care. Like, because, like, yeah, we have teenager love stories all the time. And if step-siblings aren't going to be an issue, then, like, it's the age.
Sure,
the teenager thing isn't going to be an issue for me.
I feel like the younger teenage thing is more expected. I actually
appreciated
that they were older, personally.
Yeah, that's true. And they were like, no, we want it to be this way. And so in order to make the movie that they wanted, they started their own production company. So that's what allowed them more artistic freedom. And they wanted to give up like 20 or 30 times, but they didn't. So when asked, how did you stay motivated? How did you keep going? Josephine said that, I think my absolute biggest motivation was that for me, it was like pushing myself off a cliff because I knew that if I did this movie, it was going to change my life. And the interviewer says, how so? And Josephine says, I was married to a man when I started doing it. And when the film was over, I had left him and I was with a woman that I had fallen in love with.
Sound familiar?
I know. Oh, God. She says, if I hadn't done this film, I think I'd still be with my ex-husband because I don't think I would have had that strength. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of incredible that, you know, by making this movie, it was really kind of like her creating an exit for herself, or like, you know, trying to model for herself what she should do next in her life.
I kind of want to see the movie about her making this movie, and it's like basically a big, you know, Russian nesting doll.
Stories.
Okay, so we're going to give you a quick recap of this film, just kind of going over some of the bigger plot points mostly for those of you who have seen this movie before, but maybe not in a little while. Again, if you haven't watched the movie, this is a good time to pause because the spoilers are about to get real dirty. So the story centers on Mia, who announces her engagement to Tim at her father's 60th birthday party, where he has also just asked his girlfriend, Elizabeth, to marry him, which I'm like, there's just so much going on right here.
Like, just like, pause and connect those dots a little bit. Like, Mia, brown hair, right?
Yes.
Her dad is turning 60 and has announced his engagement to, what's her
Elizabeth.
Name? Elizabeth. Thank you.
Yeah. Who's Frida's mother.
Who's Frida's mother. So you've got the parents, and then brown hair, yellow hair.
Yeah, and maybe it's like a cultural thing, but I was like, in the scene when Mia tells him that she's engaged to Tim, he starts crying out of happiness. I was like, oh, that's so sweet that it's his birthday party and he just announced his engagement and he's like so happy for his daughter.
Yeah.
But I was also like, wow, way to steal the spotlight, Mia.
Yeah. But also who seems like kind of estranged. So I felt like Like, they don't have a great relationship, clearly. So his emotion is a little surprising in retrospect.
Right. So at this party, Mia meets Elizabeth's fun-loving daughter, Frida. And I think you can see where this is going. There are a lot of looks exchanged between these two, but at first it's not super clear, like, if they're kind of eyeing each other because Mia is sort of jealous that her boyfriend is into Frida, or because there's, like, just, you know, sexy lady flirtations happening.
Uh-huh. There's just a lot of lingering eye contact. Yeah.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later too. But, and at first, Mia thinks that Frida is maybe dating Mia's much younger brother. I don't know how old he is.
I don't know. Yeah. But they have like a really kind of like banterish, fun, playful like relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. They seem like BFFs to me.
Yeah.
But it turns out, you don't know this right away, but it turns out that Frida is like super gay. So Mia. Okay. So what happens is Mia joins Frida and her mom on this weekend getaway where she's expecting to spend some quality time with her father also at this like getaway on this like island.
I think this might be like either their summer home or something. But
you mean the one on the island that they're like
The like the fishing boat and everything. But okay.
It's like their getaway vacation home or something.
Yeah.
She's expecting to spend time with her father.
She actually, that's like her one requirement is like, I'm only going if we get alone time.
It's clear like she wants to share her work with him and like, you know, they haven't talked in a while, I think. And so she wanted to like kind of reconnect. And so instead, she spends the entire weekend with these two essential strangers.
Yeah.
So she's like stuck hanging out with them. And the intense looks and like stares just continue throughout this whole weekend. But simultaneously, Mia's like just off kind of pouting because she's like butthurt, which makes sense, you know, because she wanted to see her dad. And I think that at one point, you know, she's like off drinking wine by herself, Mia.
She's literally hiding.
She's hiding like in some bushes drinking wine. And then Elizabeth tells her daughter, Frida, like, hey, you should go bring her some wine, even though she has wine. And she goes to find her and then they're like talking and lighting each other's cigarettes.
And like Mia like tucks some hair behind Frida's ear.
They're not subtle about the flirtation happening here. And then Frida's like, come here, I want to show you something. And so she takes her like kind of deeper into the woods. You don't
by
know what's going to happen. It's clear that like something's building up. And then they see these deer. I think that's what Frida wanted to show her, I'm assuming, because there's deer. And Mia can no longer handle it. And she kisses Frida.
Yep. It's a long kiss.
It was a long kiss. The deer were watching. And the rest of the movie, I'm going to go breeze past the rest of this because it's like literally the next hour is the two of them grappling with the fact that they are both in relationships.
Uh-huh.
So we know already that obviously Mia is engaged to Tim, but we also find out that Frida has a girlfriend that she lives with named Ellen. The dyke drama is palpable. And so Frida finally breaks it off with Ellen, but Mia is still engaged to dude bro Tim until he finally catches, this is like way later in the film, I think there's like 20 minutes left. He finally catches her kissing Frida on the street, which leads to their relationship blowing up in a really terrible way, finally ending. But then, so Mia chases Frida down, who had been stood up by Mia because they had planned to like meet, but then like all this other stuff happened with Tim.
And Mia didn't text? Like,
this is 2011 before cell phones.
What? Wait, no, because like Frida was checking her phone and Mia's phone is going off in the church.
Right.
So she should have just text. Like, anyway, sorry.
I mean, I feel like texting would solve 99% of problems that happen in films.
So yeah.
That's like off the table. It's like after all this, I'm kind of complaining because it's like Frida knows, you know, they're hooking up throughout this whole film while Timmy and Tim are together.
Yeah.
Like, this is no surprise. But then it's like now this is the breaking point for her where she's like, I can't. Which I guess it's
right,
fair
yeah,
where
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know, because
yeah.
now yeah, that she's broken up with her girlfriend and she's just like, what's going on? I can't deal with this anymore. So she runs off to Spain, which I think they had talked about maybe going to together.
Did they? Oh.
I don't know. Did I make that up? I probably did.
Well, she was like, let's run away. Oh, maybe.
Yeah. There was talk earlier about like, let's run away together. But like Frida was very much like, I want to live in the real world with you. I'm not looking to escape reality. Whereas like, you know, another thing that Mia is grappling this whole time is that she is actually not comfortable really with being gay.
Mm-hmm.
But we do find out she had previous relationships with women and, you know, was just trying to suppress it. So by the end of the film, Mia chases her down in Spain and they live happily ever after. That's it. That's it, pretty much. That's right. Where it ends. Yeah.
All right. So for context, what else was out around this time in terms of queer stuff? We've got, or lesbian stuff specifically, actually, The Kids Are All Right, which came out in 2010. And I'm so mad that Pariah isn't in this place. And Pariah, 2011, which is a great...
Yeah,
grateful.
I have a lot of feelings about the fact that Pariah didn't make it to the top 10.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit sad.
It's in my top 10. It's in my top
three. Oh, it's definitely in my top 10. There were some, I think, lower budget films too, but these were the ones that probably got a little bit more attention. Probably actually even more attention than Kiss Meg at the time, I'd say.
Probably because they were in English.
Yeah, fair.
So... the not queer, or queer in some ways, top grossing, I know, probably not, top grossing films were, at the time, were Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, whatever.
Part 2.
Transformers Dark of the Moon. Meh. Pirates of the Caribbean. On Stranger Tides. I don't even know what number
it's
that is.
It's so interesting how all five of these on our list, on this list here of top grossing films are not even the... They're like part of a sequel or like part of a series.
Like a series. Yeah. Ooh. So the next one is The Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1. And then the next one is another fucking Tom Cruise movie.
He cannot get out of the box office. It's
right,
just...
So Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
Yeah. Heather's theory about these films being like the top grossing ones at this time is that we're still kind of recovering from a recession. And so
Hollywood you just want like comfortable
stuff. That, and it's like things that are sure to bring in money. It's a little bleak to me to see this list, but I think from this point forward, it probably just turns into Marvel films, right?
Anyway,
I'm sad now. In terms of reviews, I could not find anything on Rotten Tomatoes, but this did get, 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb, whatever that means to you.
There also weren't really reviews at the time. We found a couple of niche reviews that I quoted.
Like Medium articles.
Right. Too. Yeah. And we'll link to a few of those. But yeah, not much. Definitely nothing that I could find in the mainstream press.
Yeah. I'm sure there were. I mean, I hope. There were things in Sweden, but not much here. And part of that, I'm sure, is due to the fact that it came out 10 years ago before the internet. I don't know.
Before the internet.
Stop. Before cell phones and the internet.
Before computers. So, typing.
Exactly.
Right.
Laurel.
Audrey. Have you seen this before?
I think we know the answer to this. Have seen it before.
I don't remember how long ago, but I'd seen it a long time ago.
Okay. I had not seen it before. As I mentioned last episode, this is the only film on the list that I have not seen. And now I have seen it.
Great. Good. I'm glad.
I watched it for this episode. Can you imagine? This whole episode is just you telling me about it. Cool. I'm like, cool. That's great. That sounds great. Had Allie seen it before?
No, she hadn't.
Oh, neither had Heather. So.
Oh, okay. Great. All right. So let's go over some of your responses to the poll that we posted on Instagram. For the question, if you had seen it, 66% of you said yes, you had, and 34% of you said no, you hadn't.
That surprised me.
Oh, good. Yeah, good.
Did it surprise
you? I don't
know. Good. Whatever.
I don't know. Does it surprise... You know what? It does surprise me, because this is on the top 10 list of lesbian films.
Well,
so I kind of assume that, like...
Actually, that would be lower, because it's probably
that's
harder
true, that's
to
true.
Get. And Death of Hearts was 56-44. Isn't that interesting? I know.
This is also one of the... It's only like there are only two foreign language films in this top 10 list, right? So it's like this and The Handmaiden.
I thought there was three. Wait.
Wait, is there more?
You don't consider Portrait?
Oh, three.
It's just like part of your DNA now. Like, you don't even think about it as
like oh, that's in a foreign language?
You.
It's weird because I speak it fluently when I watch it.
That's so good. Oh, man. It's in the language of Laurel.
Selena was speaking directly to me, which is why I don't see it as a foreign language film.
So we also asked when and where you saw this film. A lot of people watched it pretty recently, I think, in the last several years of streaming. Several people watched it when it came out, which I thought was pretty cool. We'll just read a couple of your responses. Peace and Magic said, I was 20 and not out yet. It was hard to download, but I just had to see it once I saw the trailer.
And then Sibs said, Frameline Festival 36 back in 2012 at the Castro Theater in SF.
Woo, shout
out. Cool. Yep. And then we asked for just sort of other thoughts. Thank you so much for your responses. They were all very thoughtful. So Womembrain said, way underrated on the rankings. The choreography of touches in the film is A++.
Choreography of touches.
Ooh, touch choreographer. What a great, like...
Ooh, it's kind of like how there's like an intimacy coordinator now.
Yeah, you can also
be a touch choreographer. Works together as part of the team of intimacy.
I want to be the Martha Graham of touch choreography.
I believe in you, Laurel. I think you can. I'm just picturing, for some reason, I'm picturing like a lot of little hand, little finger pretending they're people, like touching things. Like Martha Graham dancing with the fingers. Okay. Anyway.
Do you remember those little skateboards that they made for like just your fingers?
You mean the skate decks that like people still play with? Yes, I do know what you're talking about.
Do they still play with that?
It's a huge thing on the internet for like guys of a certain age. And it's still like a thing. Yeah.
Wow. I think they're called
tech decks or something.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Baby said befuddlement that it's in the top 10. And then the grimace face.
We'll get into it.
That is something we'll talk about.
Yeah. Emmy says, can't wait to watch along with yous. Kiss emojis. Same. Again, thank you to everyone who is watching along as we do this.
But also apologies if you didn't like the film. Francesco Rapizzi said, I wanted to be her. And I'm not sure which her you're talking
which
about.
Which her?
But
maybe either. Maybe it's either.
Maybe both. Maybe the mom.
Oh, that'd be great. She was actually, she might be my favorite character.
I agree.
Great. Twigs, maybe? Twigs98 said, the love scene is authentic. There were several, but I think I know which one you're talking about, and I would agree.
Ooh, do you?
I think so. I don't know. I think
so. How'd you feel about the touch choreography?
The touch choreography in the first, not the first love scene. Anyway, never mind. Go ahead.
Piece of Magic said, it's one of my faves. Chemistry, beautiful cinematography, and it has an authentic feel to it. I'm seeing a theme here with the authenticity of this film.
Biba Becker says, I really love Frida. She is so sure in her own skin and with being outed. Such a beautiful woman.
You know, I wonder if people are picking up on the, when people are talking about like the authenticity, I wonder if they're picking up on the fact that this is actually based on someone's true story.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
As it's happening, which is really fascinating.
Oh, that's
cool. Or maybe everyone who said that had the exact same experience.
Yeah, right. Stepsister. Everyone's like, finally, a love story about me and
for
my stepsister.
Me. Yeah. And my husband. Mel said, I like that they were older and this was not a coming of age film. And
I am going to
totally agree with that.
Yep. V for Fantastic. That is a great username. Very good movie. Some parts about consent are murky to me. Great call out, but maybe it's a cultural difference. I don't know. I think consent is probably a near universal thing.
Is consent the theme of this season?
Oh.
We spent so much time last episode talking about consent.
We'll find out. That's nice because like the culmination is Portrait, right? So, well, Portrait even has like at least a couple consent weirdness things.
It's probably not nearly as... questionable as I'm going to say 90% of the other films that we may be watching.
Yeah, totally.
Sunday Fusco said, truth. It was a compelling story.
Stranger Works said, truly we, the queers, can do better than this. Boop, boop, boop.
Paula said, I really liked it. It's not like a life-changing movie, but it's very well acted and gives me the fuzz.
Oh, the fuzz.
The fuzz.
Sean De La Croce said, an underrated classic.
And then Aiden Duran said, it's my happy place with my best friend, our Christmas movie.
Oh.
Heart emoji. That's really sweet.
Atraversiamo Float said, one of the best movies. Feels pretty realistic. Dazzling chemistry. Great cast overall. awesome original soundtrack.
All right, let's dive into now how we feel.
Enough about you.
Enough
about
y'all.
Us.
What about me?
Where is our voice in this podcast?
Actually, before we do that, let's talk about when it gets gay. Because
okay, yeah.
Think it's you know,
that was pretty early.
It's always interesting.
Very gay.
I have to say, it got gay. Well, aside from like the looks,
right? Yeah,
they kissed. Yeah. Mia and Frida kissed at around 27 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's like a record. It's probably going to be the fastest smooch.
We should rank these at the end. Mm-hmm. We'll re-rank the films.
Speed of gay.
Order of, yeah. of gay, yeah. yeah. Also, I'm curious if there's like a correlation between like deer, creepy deer.
Oh, nice.
Gay
yeah,
kiss.
Great. We'll keep an eye out for that.
Well, remember in Portrait when the deer show up and they kiss?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, classic scene. So now we're going to talk about the moments in the film that we didn't like as much, followed by the moments in the film or the things about the film that we did like. So do you want to start with a wait,
I don't
okay,
know.
So actually I just don't like last time for Desert Hearts, you just had the one terrible thing.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you have like smaller things this time?
I do have smaller things
okay,
this time.
Great.
Thank you. I think I've learned my lesson.
Well, this definitely had more things to sort of for us to discuss, let's say. So the first not so great thing that I had is like, geez, right out of the gate.
Okay, that was my first thing too.
Okay, great. it's like, bam, straight sex. You know, it's like, or like, I don't know, bisexual sex. I don't, whatever.
What?
Well, because yes. like she's
it
like
was,
bisexual,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
so
it
you
was
know, whatever. But
right, the sex was
P
heterosexual,
and
I guess.
Sex, like.
PMV sex, yeah, literally right off the bat. And it really takes its time. I was like, okay, I'm just going to
we get it. These are straight people is what the scene is trying to tell me. Or that like, hey, got to have something for the straights, like right out of the gate.
Yeah. When I hit play, that combined with the poster for this film.
Yeah.
Everything.
Wait, can you describe the poster?
Well, which one? There's like a bunch of them. There's one where it's like kind of split into quadrants and like the straight couples, I guess.
Right.
Are featured prominently in it.
Yeah.
And so for me, what everything was saying was this is a movie that we wanted to sell to a straight audience because they're going to bring in money, probably, I'm guessing.
Sure.
I don't know. Like I mean, it's one thing for the marketing team to do that, but I feel like it's another thing where it literally starts off as that. And maybe it's like because she was being kind of subversive. Like, I don't know. I was caught off guard. I was just like, I think because it was on the top 10 list, I'm going to spend the next 60 minutes talking about this. I think because it was on the top 10 list, I just kind of, and I hadn't seen it and I really tried to avoid anything about it. I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be a cute, romantic, you know, lesbian film. And then I was like, I felt almost triggered by the
Scene. There is so much like Mia and Tim sex that I'm like, we don't really need this in this movie. Like, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happened several times. And it's like, I get it. They have sex, you know?
Wait, do they have sex?
They do. They do have sex.
Okay.
The next sort of smallish thing is just sort of an observation. And sure, we could make the same observation about a movie like The Handmaiden, which has only Asians, right? But Scandinavia is very white. I don't remember seeing one non-white person in this movie, which is like, they're in Sweden. I get it, you know, but it was, I think, still a little jarring for me. Ellen's character could maybe be a person of color, maybe. And if so, then great. They have like one, which is sure, whatever. Anyway, but yeah, it's just like, woo, wow, lots of white people here.
Yeah, I felt like I notice a lot when I go out sometimes and I'm like, oh, I'm at a big party or something and it's like everyone is white here. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, 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 totally. Yeah. Like the dinner party was like, wow, all of your friends are white.
I would say this is a big one for me, but it's probably not. Like, I don't know if it's like objectively a big one, but the music was really tough for me until the very end. The soundtrack was mostly guys singing. And for like a good portion of the film, especially like when they're in their like, you know, van driving over to the island, they're playing kind of this
reggae?
Jack Johnson-esque soft rock reggae.
Right. Inspired. Yeah.
And, you know, I actually love I do like Jose Gonzalez, who's featured on the soundtrack, but like in this context, it was so strange to me.
Yeah.
Heather was like, oh, it's the classic music of lesbianism.
Right.
I was like, what's going on? They couldn't get like a more,
yeah,
you know, they couldn't get a more diverse collection of artists for the soundtrack. I don't know.
Right, right.
There is one song that is not by a dude as far as I can tell, which I'll get into in a second, but yeah, so that was a big one for me. It was like, it kept pulling me out of the film.
Yeah, I agree. The next one I had for me, and so it's just getting like bigger and bigger now, but geez, the men in this film, except for Oscar, who was a delight.
Oh, yeah, Oscar was cute.
It's funny, like there was sort of a throwaway line. It's the scene where they're, I guess, practicing their vows, which is like, it seems like such a simple thing to, I guess, do people do that? Like, I know they're like rehearsal dinners and stuff, but it's, I don't know, maybe they had a longer thing. But so they're talking to the priest and he says, okay, and this is the part where it's like, blah, 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 till death do you part. And Mia freaks out and she's like, I can't. And she runs away. And then the priest is trying to comfort Tim as he also leaves the church by saying, this happens all the time. And it's like, yeah, maybe if like all the men in your life are, or like all the men in this particular world are terrible, their actions are on a scale to like annoying to kind of horrific, then yeah, I would also like run away from marrying these dudes. And so that's kind of what I imagine this fictional priest witnessing constantly is just like, huh, all these women leave at the altar all the time. You know, this happens all the time.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is like, we don't need a villainous male character to legitimize Mia wanting to be with Frida, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
she can want that and still have a good relationship with this guy. Or like, this guy can still be amazing or like whatever, or mediocre. But I feel like his arc was more bending towards like, I'm actually a douchebag.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I just don't think it was necessary, you know?
Yeah. I think I'll get into this a little bit like further down the list. Actually, I think I have like two more points, but my last one, we'll touch on this a little bit. But like the sort of Western filmmaking, storytelling dependency on conflict was just like over the top for me here. Yeah. Anyway, we can get into that later.
Oh yeah. Like every... You could see it. I felt like it was almost like transparent the way it's like, oh, this happens in order for this to happen in a very explicit, blatant way, right?
Yeah. Actually, okay, so my next one is the setup is so obvious, you know? They're talking about their engagement rings or whatever, and she's like, I'll never take it off. And he's like, you promise? And she's like, I promise. And then, like, at that point, Allie was like, until, you know?
Right,
like,
because
we know
what's
coming, because it's such a weird setup. And then everyone's getting married. Like, oh my gosh, how straight. And then, of course, it's like you find out that they've been in a 7-year relationship and now they've just gotten engaged and everyone loves Tim and they work together. Maybe they own the company together or something and they're shopping for a home and they're planning a family. It's like, all right, we get it. You know, you're going to set up this like gay or bisexual homewrecker, you know, which is also something I have a problem with. So you really want to build this like home for her to wreck. It's like... I didn't need it. It was overkill at a certain point.
Yeah, I felt like they were really hitting us over the head with a lot of that storytelling. Totally. And throughout most of the earlier part of the film, like Frida just seems like, and I think someone else brought this up too, she knows herself really well.
Yeah.
She's very honest. You know, I think one of their first conversations, she said, what did she say to her on the ferry to Mia?
Oh, you're anal or something?
Yeah, she called her anal. Right. And I was like, oh, I like you, Frida. But then it turns out she has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And
right.
So
yeah,
she
yeah.
had been cheating too. And I was like, did we really need that?
No,
like,
we totally
not that
didn't.
That situation couldn't happen in real life, obviously, but it's like.
Sure, right, yeah.
It's really interesting, like, the fixation with cheating on this film because it's like they talk about both.
Geez.
I think both fathers.
Yeah.
Are cheaters too.
Yeah.
Right?
And then both of them say that, or like it's implied that neither of them cheats in some way. Like Oscar says, oh, we got our mother's like faithful gene or something. And then Frida says, I would never cheat.
Yeah. So I think maybe like the intention with the writing was that like, oh, these people aren't perfect. They have flaws.
Yeah. Or this love is like so strong that it pulls them out of character or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that was also one of mine on my list. Was it's like, I don't have a problem with stories about cheating, but I just felt like it was really on the extreme end of it where it's like, okay, everyone's a cheater. I get it. Like, I read that interview with Ruth about this story, and she said something about how, like, oh, you know, Ruth is not, no one's a hero, or the story isn't really like, about heroes. And sure, that's true. But I also feel like because there is a very clear happy ending, it feels like there's a little bit of a reward for the cheating.
Not that they don't like go through. Well, does Free? Oh, yeah. They both kind of get punished for the cheating. But
they do. But I don't know. I think they could have just toned it down a little.
Oh, I guess.
All I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Heather said, as we were watching it, she said, it's just so tedious that she's cheating on her girlfriend with this basic lady. No offense to Ruth, because she was great, but
she was
very like pouty through most
of it. Yeah. It's like, wow, you nailed her being an unlikable character. Good job. Okay. So I think I'm going to go into my complaint about the men a little bit more. I said that their behavior ranged from like annoying to terrible, and I just want to be more explicit about that, because I feel like it's sort of important. So let's start with like the lighter end of the spectrum. At the beginning, you can tell that Mia is kind of anxious about being at the dinner party, and she, you know, she's kind of like adjusting the present, and Tim, he calls her, oh, you little nutter, you know, like,
oh yeah,
yeah. So it's like, that's, you know, flag number one. And then, like, later they're in bed and she brings up the fact that her dad didn't seem to like the dress or whatever. I think this is that part. And she said, he said, like, oh, maybe you should listen to him, you know. And then either in that same conversation or another conversation, he's like, you need someone to tell you what to do.
Yes.
And then, like, her father also, like, Tim gets worse, and I'll get into that later. But, like, her father is also not great. Like, he's... Mm-mm. He just shuts down whenever you need to, like, talk to someone. He promises things clearly and doesn't follow through. He dismisses kind of, like, the pain that he caused her in her life. And he has sort of a nice arc in that he kind of comes around. But, like, going back to Tim. So Tim, when he sees Mia and Frida on the street kissing, he freaks out, which, sure, like, you know, I would also freak out if I saw Allie kissing a man, I guess, on the street.
Or anyone.
Yeah. like, I think, you know, like, it's a little jarring thinking like your straight person or your gay person in my case is totally different from what you imagined. But anyway, like, that's still no reason to then, like, I'm not going to go into what he does, but, like, later on in their bedroom, it gets pretty horrible. And, you know, and then later, you know, as he just slowly falls apart, he's like constantly yelling at her, he's pretty verbally abusive, and then he like does this the last scene that we have of Tim, also just like the name is now like Tim. I'm sorry to any Tims out there. Maybe he's like petulantly folding their menus, like their wedding menus that have just arrived, into paper airplanes, and like you can see that he's done this like 100 times or something, and he's just like angrily tossing paper airplanes, and he tries to throw them at her, and then he yells at her, and it's just like, ugh, gross, you know. So anyway, the men, like, except for Oscar. Anyway, yeah.
On the subject of petulance, I feel like that's kind of a theme, at least for the men throughout. Like the dad,
oh,
I know he
gosh,
has this like
yeah.
slightly nicer arc, but he is like a baby. Like,
oh yeah.
At one point, they were like in their greenhouse or something, and like Elizabeth, his fiance, says something about putting like the flower.
Oh yeah, in, yeah, yeah. It was an orchid
pot.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and he
like,
was
oh,
like,
"Oh, she
not
gave
a
you
flower,
a nice vase.
It's an
yeah.
orchid." Like, I was just like, "Wow, what a bitch!" And he's like also really patronizing. Like when Mia just wants to like spend time with him, at one point he's like, "Oh, tomorrow you can show me your blueprints and we can spend the whole day together."
Right,
I'm like, "She's
yeah.
not." Eight.
Right.
I don't know.
She's not like trying to show you her drawings and like
yeah.
So you can
yeah.
put them on the fridge. Right.
Yeah, and I'm glad he comes around with the whole like homophobia thing, but like I feel like I can't get into this.
I know.
I'm just
yeah.
Go on and on. Yeah.
I will say that I think the first time I watched this movie, like I really just sort of glossed over mm-hmm. their behavior mm-hmm. and just kind of accepted it. Like, oh yeah, I can see why Tim would be so mad, you know. And it's like, no, like I'm glad that
yeah.
like watching this a second time, I was able to note some development on my part where it's yeah. like, no, this is actually unacceptable behavior.
You've grown.
I know. That's great.
I only have one more thing. And okay. I feel like I'm zooming in more on like technical stuff because I do have a lot of problems with the story overall. But once I go down that route, what am I going to, where do I draw the line, you know? And so for me, one of my biggest complaints about this film were the close-ups. Like, I felt like this film was 90% close-ups. And I'll actually say this. I have this in, like, the flip side of this, which is, like, moments that I like, too. I like this idea where they're using this as a mechanism to kind of, like...
convey intimacy or something.
Yeah, to convey intimacy, exactly. Between you, between them, etc. But I just felt like it was too much. It was, like, to the point where... I often didn't know what was happening because it was just like a close up on their whole face.
Yeah.
There's that scene where she's like, Frida's like pedaling back with her, which is actually kind of cute. And they go swimming. It's adorable. But I was like, what is happening? Like, where is she? She floating off somewhere?
Right, yeah.
You know, because it's just a close up of Mia's face. And it's like, oh, she's leaning on her back. Like, she's bicycling.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's just like really interesting choices that, again, I feel like they could have. Toned it down a little bit.
Or just given, like, do a, like a wider shot first and then, like establish context at least.
Yeah, it felt almost suffocating to me. Like, I was like, let it breathe.
Yeah. Okay, so my last one is I realized, thinking about this film afterward, that this is one of, I think this is actually one of the films that made me stop looking for gay films to watch.
Oh, no.
Because, like, There's just always this tension after they start to get together. Like, is someone going to find them? Is someone going to see them?
Yeah.
Like, so they were kissing in the shed, right? And then they pull apart very suddenly because her mom comes in. They have sex for the first time in, like, the guest bedroom. And then the mom comes in to, like, you know, say good morning or whatever. And so there's always just this, like, panic associated. And then, of course, they let their guard down. I also have, like, an out-of-character issue with, like, how uptight Mia is. But they're kissing in public, like, constantly.
I know.
Which I was like, well,
you know when you're that overwhelmed with love and lust.
I guess. Well, I don't buy it. Anyway.
I just want to add something to what you're saying about constantly being caught. What's crazy, too, it's, like, it's double-whammy because it's, like, are you worried about the gay factor?
Yeah,
or
the cheating.
Or the fact that they're cheating. They're both cheating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, of course, finally, they're... in one of those moments where they've let their guard down and they're kissing in the street, and that's when Tim sees them. And it's like, you know what? This is super traumatizing. So I think it was like this and watching Lost in Delirious where I was like, I don't need to see gay films ever because I don't that's not what I want my gay life to be like.
Yeah. This was a rough time.
Yeah.
For lesbians.
Okay. So that was the last thing that I had.
Let's talk about what we liked about this film.
Oh, great.
Did you have anything
you liked? Yay! I did. Oh, that's so sad.
I had some stuff.
I did too. So I did think that it was, you know, like a well-made, like it was shot well. I thought that, except for the overkill on close-ups. Like it didn't feel like, how do I say this? Just like a low-rent film that they made with their friends because no one wanted to finance a lesbian film or something.
Which would be fine, too.
Which would also be fine. Yes. No, that's true. Yeah. But it felt like a quality, like a...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Please don't make me try to say this. I don't know how to say it.
I actually really, I liked all the looks.
Yeah.
Like, I complained about the close-ups. I think on the flip side of that, I do kind of appreciate that mechanism in some situation, even though, like, they are, like, really hitting you over the head.
Yeah.
You know, with it. Like, I felt like manipulated at times, but I do feel like there was a lot of chemistry. I do feel like they, I got it. Like, they really liked each other from the get go, you know? There was no doubt. You know, they had good gay face.
Well, I was confused at the beginning.
Oh. Well, at the very, very beginning.
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
What's going on? But I appreciated that and the fact that it got gay early.
Yeah. Well, okay. So tied to that, I thought the acting across the board was good. There wasn't anyone that kind of took me out of the movie or that happens sometimes in like some queer films that I've seen where you've got even like a good storyline, everything else is fine, but they're just very sort of like stiff actors or I don't know how to explain it. So everyone I thought was a good actor. And like you said, the chemistry, that was super believable to me and probably actually carried the film for me.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
Was that their relationship was, or their affection for each other was believable.
Can you imagine if it was They had no chemistry.
Oh, and man.
Also all the other stuff with just like the toxic men.
Right.
And
the
triggering like straight, you know, moments. What would we have? But yeah, you're right. I feel the same way.
Yeah. I did also want to call out Mia especially. Like, I think that she had a difficult role to play in that she's not like a Piper Perabo sort of like sweet, I'm straight, maybe, you know, like like we'll probably get to in Imagine Me and You.
Yeah.
Not Lost and Delirious. But her character arc, I thought, was handled well, where she, at the beginning, she basically got kind of led around by the men in her life. It's funny, like her like walking away from things became sort of a theme. Like after, I think it was after they had sex for the first time, or maybe after they kissed for the first time, Frida sat down to have coffee outside with her, and she gets up and Mia gets up and walks away, right?
She walked away that night too.
Oh, like, okay, so like Frida gets in the other bed and then Mia gets up and walks away. And there's like a point where like I think she walks away at least one more time, but then Frida's mom, Elizabeth, is like, hey, do you want to come fishing with us? And so she gets in a boat, but you can tell that she wants to walk away, but she can't because she's in a boat. And then she's having that conversation with Frida like in the lake or something, and then like gay panic, and she like drops off the log and swims away. I was like, oh my gosh.
Like she's trying to tell us something.
So it's like, I get it. This is a woman who runs away from her problems. Yeah. But then by the end, you know, she's like very determinedly pursuing Frida, like to the point where she buys a ticket to another country and like walks around the city and finds her. Like, how does she find her in Barcelona is still something that I'm just not going to touch.
There's only one place a lesbian would go to in Barcelona.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's like she is now heading toward the thing that she wants, even though it's like difficult. And I thought they did that well.
Yeah. On the topic of her walking away, what's interesting is like I hadn't guessed that she had previously been attracted to women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do appreciate that even though they've hit me over the head with everything else, that is the one thing they didn't. Although I guess you could say that her walking away was her being like, I can't confront the fact that I actually really love women, right?
Right.
But I think that was probably what she was like responding to more so than even her attraction to Frida necessarily. It was like, I can't do this at all.
And then her dad even says like, I kind of suspected or something, or like, So
I feel like that was also part of his validation too, was like it wasn't that he was like truly homophobic, although that's debatable. It was like he couldn't reconcile, like he couldn't deal with the fact that he knew this about her anyway, you know? So
Right.
But back to things we love. I love the sweaters.
Oh yeah. So the cozy. Sweaters are great. Yeah. Great sweaters throughout.
Yeah.
Is that it? I liked the ending.
Okay, I have two more things on
my
list.
Okay, great. Yeah.
I love the scene just because I could see the comedy here. They are having, I think, like dinner with the father, the mother. I think everyone's there at this point. The husband's there or the fiance. And there's this moment where you think Frida's going to say like, I can't. She's like, I can't. And you think that she's going to like out.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mia, the look, the panic on her face. And I'm like, oh no, where is this going? But then she's like, I can't stay. I had a kebab earlier.
I had a bad kebab. And then they kebab.
I thought you don't eat meat. And then she's like, a veggie kebab. And then the whole family's complaining. And then Heather was like, this is the queer content I've been waiting for. But I don't know. Like, I thought that scene was like really, it felt like almost improvised. It's so random.
Yeah, yeah. And the dad was like, well, why would you even eat a kebab if it wasn't for the meat?
I know.
It's just like, oh my God, just let her go.
And Mia, or Frida's like crying, you know, because she's like so heartbroken. And it's like the kebab. The last thing I had, which I don't know if you had something else you wanted to...
I was just going to talk about the ending a little bit.
Okay, this is related to this. But this keeps happening where it's like, I don't like this, but I like this that's related to it, which is the whole film. I'm like, what's up with the soundtrack? And then when Robin's song comes on at the end, I was like, because I love Robin.
Yeah,
I was like, finally, like,
okay, cool.
This is
yeah.
so great. And that was like the very end. And I thought that was really lovely.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, the last thing I was going to talk about was the ending. It's the end of Mia's arc, and we find that she finds herself, and the scene was just really nice. You know, it's like Barcelona is a great place to shoot anything. It was cute that it was just like a look, you know, a meaningful look between the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a sweet ending.
Yeah. So now that we've processed this, how would you rate the film?
Okay.
Should we say out of kisses? How many kisses?
How many kisses would you give this film?
What do you want it to be? An engagement ring? How many engagement rings?
Ew, gross.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Let's go with kisses
or lips.
I'm gonna go with 3, 2.5, 3. I'll go with 3. I feel bad. And it's because I think technically it was a good film and the chemistry was good, but there were so many things that are re-traumatizing for me about it. Like, I never like films where gay people are worried about being found out. Mm-hmm. And the treatment that she got for, like, the treatment specifically from Tim, sort of from her dad, was just so abusive and, like, so unnecessary in my mind that I don't think I can give it more than a 3. I will say, though, and I forgot to mention this in my list of things that I liked, that I really liked Elizabeth because she seemed like a very reasonable person. And even when Frida's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm falling in love with your stepdaughter, she was like, oh my gosh, love whoever you want, but does it have to be like, what's his face's daughter? And, you know, eventually she even comes around to that. Yeah, so her character was a nice sort of like oasis for me throughout the film.
Yeah, I think she was one of the only characters in that film that were like sympathetic.
I mean, not that
everyone wasn't sympathetic to a certain degree, except for maybe Tim, but.
And not even everyone has to be. It's just like, I need someone to harbor myself with.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, kisses for me. This is hard. I was like a solid 2 for a while. If I could give it a 2.5 kiss, I would. 3 is hard for me because I would say 3 is like a solid film that like but don't love. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I like a 3. I love a 4, and a 5 is just very, very fucking rare.
Right. Yeah.
I think if I had seen this at the time, you know, and it was like earlier in my gay days, and now I'm an elder gay and super jaded, I have to give it a 2.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. And okay. I think you very like clearly illustrated the reasons that I have as well.
I am going to adopt your scale rubric and also switch mine to a 2.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm not apologizing to you. I'm apologizing to
you.
I mean, I shouldn't apologize. This is how I feel about the film. There were some redeeming qualities. I didn't give it a 1.
And if you love it, that's great. You know, it's like, it's just, these are our ratings.
It wasn't really for me. Yeah.
All right.
Are you ready to read Allie's?
I am. Okay. So I asked Allie to just choose an emoji that she felt matched her feelings about the film. So she gave it 3 out of 5 slight frowny faces.
3 out of 5 slight? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess it's an odd rating system because I guess a very good movie would be 5 slight frowny faces, but it's fine. And her explanation is it was more tolerable than most lesbian films I've seen. Oh, I take it back. Mm. I think that if she had given it 5, she probably would have turned it into a smiley face. That makes sense.
Okay.
But yeah, so more tolerable than most lesbian films I've seen.
Oh, that makes me sad for us.
I know.
She's not wrong. She's not wrong.
Yeah. But hopefully we'll find more things. Ugh. How about Heather?
Heather drew a cute little lip and she wrote 1 lip.
Oh my God, 1 lip? Not even like a whole mouth?
Oh no, 1 lips.
Oh, okay, got it. 1 mouth. Like, wow.
Like a half star. Yeah. Heather wrote 1 lips or mouth, mostly for the A++ gay gazing with an asterisk.
Yeah.
I'll get to that in a second. But oof, that plot.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Gay gazing, asterisks, verging on eye fucking. So, yikes. I feel like that averages out to 2 lips between all 4 of us.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, that's where we're at with this. Oh, I don't know why I feel so bad. I shouldn't feel bad about it.
Like, I'm very happy that if you love this film, you have this film in your life.
Yes. Same. At least no one died.
At least no one died. I'm back up to 3 lips. No, I'm kidding. Ugh, okay. It's still 2. We're now entering the vault. Are we entering the vault?
Yeah, let's open the vault and go in.
Okay.
Let's put our
vault hat on.
Okay. Yeah, definitely put our vault hard hats on. It's rocky in here. We're going in.
It's a cave.
It's a deep tunnel. It's a dark, moist tunnel. And we are going to be putting some of our items, our lesbian items in here. This is the Sapphic Culture Vault, for context.
Hey, we're in the Sapphic Culture Vault.
In case you didn't listen to the last episode. Whoa, where'd you go, Laurel?
Sorry, let me turn on my headlamp.
What are you putting in the vault this week, Laurel?
So the first thing I'm putting in the vault this week is TV and movie tomboys from the 80s and 90s, because I didn't have access to other queer role models, and something about these girls and
so
women just sort of like struck a chord with me. Examples include Punky Brewster, Joe from Facts of Life, Alex Mack from the Nickelodeon show. I forget the whole name of her show, but titular character. Mm. And always, so, you know, you have these movies about these underdog sports teams, and there's like often one girl. And so it was that one girl on those sports teams. Like, I think the Mighty Ducks had like one girl. Was there like a baseball movie, a football movie? I don't know. There were definitely
there were this like the Bad News.
Right. Bad News Bears or something.
Yeah. I don't know if that was the 80s, but yeah. Same idea. Yeah.
Yep. And then the second thing that I'm putting in the vault are rainbow flags. So.
Whoa.
Just all of them. Taking all of them. Sorry. I know you have enjoyed yours for years, but it's in the vault now. So when I first came out, it was always such a relief to just see a rainbow flag in a business or, you know, like as a sticker on a door. And I've always kind of appreciated that people took the effort to like signal that this was like a safe space for me, or that like queer people owned it or any. It was just sort of like if you ever walked down a business district and you saw a rainbow flag, it was like, oh, thank God. You know, like there's this, at least for me, like there was this like immediate feeling of relief that even maybe this whole neighborhood is probably safe because this business is able to have this flag outside. So those were very meaningful to me and still are, honestly.
Those are very good first vault items. Weirdly, and I feel like we must be on the same wavelength because Laurel and I didn't talk about this, but like originally the first thing I was going to put in was a piece of content that was like part of your first one.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which is The Journey of Natty Gann. Are you familiar with this Disney film?
I don't think so.
There is the tomboy of all tomboys. I don't know if you can see this link.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. So it's
wow,
this Disney.
I even had a hat like that. Oh my God. That's so good.
I'm not putting this in the vault because you put all the tomboys in the vault.
Oh, she's in the vault. Yeah.
She's already in the vault, but it's a 1985 Disney
movie.
That's
so good.
Weirdly,
oh my gosh.
John Cusack plays like the guy that she like ends up being kind of like her love interest,
no.
But I'm like, nah, she gay.
Yeah.
Okay, there's like a wolf dog in it who also is the same wolf dog who plays a wolf in White Fang.
Wow.
I know. Like, what's gayer than having a wolf? Nothing. But my real thing that I'm putting in the vault this week is the 90s to early 2000s Delia's catalog.
Oh my God. Yes.
Which I think was like really the Beefcake magazine for baby dykes.
Yeah.
In the like 90s.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So this was like a clothing catalog and it was kind of like almost like an alternative to going to the mall for like preteens and teens and maybe like even... Yeah, I would say like solidly teens.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But there was something so gay about everyone in the, like all the models, all the clothing. And if you look at it now, if you've never seen this catalog, just like Google it.
We're going to do a post with these items.
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to say we'll do a show, like a show for you.
Sure, yes.
But the aesthetic now is like back, right? Everyone looks like this. But I also like that the models, I don't feel like they were like supermodels. They look like mostly real people. I mean, still like, you know.
Very beautiful, but still.
Yeah. But I think they were mostly scouted on the street. It had this kind of like web 1.0 aesthetic.
Yeah.
With even the branding of Delia's with like the casing of whatever. What is it called when it's not like leet speak, but you know, when it's like lowercase, uppercase together, there's probably a name for it.
Well, now like it's like meme sort of crazy talk, but yeah.
Anyway, that's what's going in the vault.
Have I shown you the drawing that I did of one of the... Yeah.
Yes, you did. You should probably post that too.
If I can find it,
That seems appropriate.
All right. So if you've got stuff for the vault, email it our way or send it some other way. I don't know how else.
Just send it out. Yeah. Make a paper airplane and fly it.
And also, if our discussion of Kiss Me sparked any thoughts or feelings, post a comment on Instagram at Sapphic Culture Club. You can tweet your opinions at us at Sapphic Podcast, or you can email us at sapphiccultureclub@gmail.com.
And then lastly, you can find a link to the episode transcript and links to other things we've mentioned in the description of the episode, wherever you're listening to this podcast. For our next episode, we're going to be embarking on a short side quest away from our main journey of this top 10 list. And we'll be talking about another classic Sapphic film that both of us think should have made it to the top 10 list, but didn't. Dun, dun, dun. Tune in 2 weeks to find out what movie we're talking about. And in the meantime, take care, y'all.
I'm waving, but bye.
Bye.